Question something on Hanukkah, even though it's Parsha Vayeshev, and I will protest that Parsha Vayeshev has tons of amazing stuff in it, but Hanukkah is coming and we're not meeting next week, so we're going to talk Hanukkah. I want to take one particular sugya that is problematic. We're going to study the sugya together, a piece of Gemara, and then on the back, we're going to take a look, and the back we actually follow the sugya through, and then take a look at some interesting nuances about it. Which may reflect also a modified understanding of how to solve the essential problem. And the essential problem is as follows. Let's kind of backtrack it a little bit. Hanukkah, the event of Hanukkah, happened in 164 BCE in the winter. Actually, it happened starting much earlier than that, and it continued much later than that. When did Hanukkah become any sort of a special day? Meaning, it became a special day on the spot, but there were also special days happening then. When did it become part of the calendar? The answer is we don't know, but it was not immediate. The famous commentary on Megillat Tanit that shows up in the Gemara says, L'shana acheret, kva'um. A later year, they made those days into special days. Why did they pick 8 days? We've talked about that a lot, about why they made it an eight-day holiday. But for some reason, and we'll discuss what the reason is, at a particular point, they decided that the way to celebrate it is through lighting candles. And the Rav claimed, at least based on the Rambam, that that was actually instituted after the destruction, which would mean that for the first 200 years or so of the holiday, or however long it was, till the destruction, it was celebrated as a Mikdash holiday. They would celebrate it in the Mikdash with all sorts of things. But in any case, we're certainly familiar with the fact that the main focus of it is Hadlakat HaNer. All right, so we'll take a look at the sugya, which is going to open up some interesting doors for us. I'm right now, what I did here is I photocopied the, or I printed out the entire page of Gemara, just so you'd see that this is legitimately a page of Gemara. Of course, you can't really see it. It's way too small. But you see where the arrow is. That's exactly where it is on the page. And we are taking a look at a fairly sizable chunk here of Gemara. This is Masechet Shabbat, Daf Chaf Gimel. Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. Now, if you'd like to follow this on the back, you will see it laid out differently. Matter of fact, I'm going to actually read it from the back. I'm going to show you what I've done here. And this is something, Rav Avram, that we talked about doing is kind of a general overview and introduction to Gemara, which I'm going to put in a little bit of a plug, is that we are now coming to the end of the 13th cycle of the Daf Hayomi, and we're going to be starting a new cycle, Mirtz Hashem, in a couple weeks. And everybody's welcome to come join us or any other tons of shiurim that are going on, that an opportunity to start in at the beginning of Masechet Brachot and join the fun of studying Daf Yomi. And so what we're doing as part of our Siyum celebration, our Shir, is I'm giving a few Shirim that are kind of broad overviews to the Gemara. And one of the first things we'll talk about is that when you read Gemara, you're not reading a book. You're not reading an anthology. You are reading a multi-layered transcription of conversations. And there are all sorts of tools that you can get that will help you decipher what layer you're reading in order to be able to understand who's talking to whom. You've got psukim, but that's not unusual. You've got material that goes back as far as the first century CE. You really don't have much material before that. And then you have tons of material that's part of the second and third centuries CE. That's Mishnah and Braita and the early Amoraim. But you have material going as late as the 6th or 7th century CE. And how to pick it apart and see who's making a comment on what, it actually takes a lot of study. So what I've done here is I've taken the same exact material that you have from beginning to end and broken it up, first of all, into lines, as you can see. Second of all, I've color-coded it and used all sorts of other devices to try to demonstrate what part of the text we're looking at. So you can follow it in the regular Gemara, which is great, or you can follow it on here if you'd like. All right, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. So now that means, just a little methodology here, who made this statement?
Rav.
Who's Rav? Rav is not his name. Rav is a title, like the Rav. Rav was a title for a chacham whose name was Abba. He was commonly known as Abba Aricha because he was tall. Abba was a chacham who lived in Bavel, grew up in Bavel, whose uncle, twice over, was Rabbi Chia, who also made Aliyah. Rabbi Chia became a student, the closest student of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in Beit Sharim. Rav, at a later point, came to join him and study with him, and he studied with him as a young student in Rabbi's Beit Midrash for a number of years, and then he came back to Bavel. And Rav is commonly seen as sort of the chalutz, the pioneer, the builder of Talmud HaBavli, and in the beginning of Babylonian academics. The truth is that there were Babylonian academies during the periods of the Tanaim, what we call the Tanaim. But Rav is kind of seen, he came in somewhere around the year 220 or so to Bavel, and lived till I think 247, and he established a Beit Midrash in the very small town of Sura, which became there a yeshiva that lasted for 1,000 years. Not in Sura, it got moved, but it was still called Sura, like the Hebron yeshiva in Yerushalayim is still called Hebron. And Rav said the following. So how come it says Amrav Chia Barashi Amrav? Why didn't it just say Amrav? Because we have to remember, nothing, and I cannot accentuate this enough, nothing was written down. The only things written down, there were two things that were written down. Sorry, three things were written down. One thing was written down was Tanakh. Tanakh was written down in scrolls. The second thing is that it was written down, what?
Torah is written down.
I'm saying Tanakh. It's written down.
Oh, Tanakh, yeah.
Tanakh. The second thing is that contracts and other things happen to be written. Things that you needed, those are written, but that's not part of the learning world. And the third thing is that certain chachamim would keep notes, private notes that were not published. That we know of, we hear stories here and there. But overwhelmingly, the material that we are looking at was not written down. So Rav made a statement in the Beit Midrash, nobody wrote it down. Nobody tweeted it out, Rav's latest statement. It was not written down. It was memorized by Tanaim, memorizers who would memorize what Rav taught, and they would add it to their data bank of material that they knew. And we have all sorts of people who are students of Rav. Now, these students would then come to the Beit Midrash and share what Rav said when Rav wasn't around anymore.
But this was an effort to keep it as an oral law, wasn't it?
Good question, why? Lots of discussion about why it was kept that way, and what was the motivation for keeping it oral and not writing it down. That's a whole shiur by itself. But Rav Chia Barashi, therefore, reports to us what Rav said. All right, so that's just as far as that system goes. What does Rav say? And now I put Rav's statement in red. Rav's statement is what we refer to as a memra. A memra literally just means a saying. And a memra, the way we use it as a technical term, refers to a halachic saying made by one of the chachamim after the Mishnah, what we commonly call a moraim. So Rav, Shmuel, Rava, Abai, Rabba, Rav Yosef, etc. makes a statement. It is a memra. Or sometimes it's called a shmata. Same thing. It's a statement, right? A hearing. And memrot, as you could see, are in what language? Take a look at them. They're all in Hebrew.
Hebrew.
All in Hebrew. They're all short. Memrot are overwhelmingly short. All right? And they are just quick halachic statements. Right? So that's why we're doing this. This is straight out of the Gemara. This is Rav. But when anybody, whether it was Rabbi Akiva, whether it was Rav, whether it was Rav Ashi, anybody is issuing a halachic statement, it's always in Hebrew. Always in Hebrew. Remember, Rabbi Akiva, when he spoke to his wife about dinner, he spoke in Aramaic. Right? They didn't speak Hebrew. But the Mishnah is in Hebrew because the Mishnah is a halachic statement. Okay. So what did Rav say? Hamadlik ner shochanuka tzarich levarech. Boom, that's it. Five simple words. Six simple words. Hamadlik ner shochanuka tzarich levarech. When you light the ner of Chanukah, you have to make a bracha. Okay. Rav Yirmiya omer. Now it's unclear whether Rav Yirmiya now is giving a second statement or he's saying Rav said something else. He says, Haro en ner shochanukah. So Rav Yirmiya, this Rav Yirmiya is a student of Rav. Right? There's Rabbi Yirmiya, who was in Eretz Yisrael. Question is whether he's the same guy. Could be. Haro en ner shochanukah tzarich levarech. What does that mean? Haro en ner shochanukah. What does that mean? If you see ner shochanukah, You have to make a bracha. Now, wait a second. If you, what? You don't know which bracha. You also don't know, does that mean if I lit it, so I say a bracha because I lit it and I saw it, but if I saw it, I say a bracha and then I light it? What does it mean? So we don't know.
Or every time you see it.
Or every time you see it, you have to make a bracha, right?
It's like the shofar. If you hear the sound of the shofar, it's
good. Okay. I'm a Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is a close student of Rav. Matter of fact, Rav Yehuda becomes the greatest scholar of the next generation. When Rav dies, he goes to study with Shmuel, and he becomes Shmuel's prize student, and he then establishes the yeshiva in Pumbedita, which was the preeminent yeshiva for the next 900 years. I'm Rav Yehuda. Yom Rishon, Haro'em Mevarech Shtayim, Umadlik Mevarech Shalosh. So what does he say? On the first day, if you see it, you say two brachot, and if you light it, you say three. Now, what does that immediately tell you about this issue of lighting and seeing and which bracha?
Not everybody lit.
Okay, so certainly it's possible to be somebody who only saw and didn't light. What else do you see from the number? Haro'eh mevarech shtayim umadlik mevarech shalosh. So it seems to be that there's a bracha that only a madlik can say, and there's a bracha that a madlik or a roeh can say, and the roeh is cut out of one of them, right? Okay? And so that makes sense. We have another calculus, which is, mikan v'elech madlik v'erech shtayim v'erech v'erech achat. After the first day, the guy who makes the bracha says two, and the guy who sees says one. Okay? Now that tells us right away that there's two diminishings that take place. There's two diminishings that take place, right?
Bill, I'll start.
No,
That there's, that's what you're saying. That there's two diminishings that take place. One is between the who and who? The lighter and the only seer. And the other one is between the first day and any day afterwards. All right? And the Rav Yehuda statement put it all together. That the one who lights on the first day says three, the one who only sees, I'm going to add in the word only, says two. That on every day after the first day, do that same group and drop one off. Which means that there's one bracha that's disappeared after the first day. Now, we don't know what these brachot are, so we don't know what's disappearing, etc. But we don't know that. We don't know anything, do we? Just look at the statements. All we know is when you light candles, you have to make a bracha. When you see candles, you have to make a bracha. And only with Rav Yehuda do we understand that there are different brachot, and the one lighting is going to make more than the one seeing. So it's reasonable to say that the one seeing, well, if you light, you also see. So therefore, the one who lights says both. And the one who sees says only one of them. And then there's some third one there that disappears after the first day. We don't know more. Now, the Gemara then asks, and I want to show you, I've gone off of red. My mema'et. So what's the question? Which one drops after the first day? Right?
Which bracha?
Which bracha? And they say mema'et zman, which means something's going on here. The Gemara already knew which three brachot we're talking about. It already knew it. And it knew that the guy who's lighting is going to make a bracha that has something to do with the act of lighting. That the guy lighting and the guy not lighting, who's only seeing, is going to make some bracha about the nes. And that there's also a bracha you make called zman. Zman is shorthand for shachianu. Good. V'nimot ne. Now, by the way, how come this is all in black?
It's Gemara talking.
It's Gemara talking, and it's in Aramaic, because what is it? I told you, it's all transcriptions. There's a transcription of the discussion going on. So in the Beit Midrash, somebody came in and said, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. I have a quote going way back. Rav said, when you light candles, you have to make a bracha. Somebody else said, Rav Yirmiya said, when you see. Then Rav Yehuda said, 3, 2, 2, 1. And now in the Beit Midrash, they're having a discussion. Well, which one drops off after the first day? Mayim and Ma'eit, right? And the answer they give is Mema'id Zman. After the first day, you drop Shachianu. Now, what's difficult about teaching this piece, everybody knows this. Right, kids in Hebrew school in second grade, no. You don't say Shachianu after the first day. All right, good. We have to somehow remind ourselves that we don't know it because they don't know it yet because they're still working it out. Okay. So they ask, v'nimot nes. Why don't we cut out what? Nes. What's nes? Sha'asa nisim. So that means what would you have? On the first day, you'd say all three. If you're a roeh, you'd say sha'asa nisim shachianu. And then what would you say the next night if you're lighting? Ladig ner and shachianu, and not sha'asa nisim. Right? In other words, you're thanking God for the miracle, and the miracle happened chiefly on the first day. And Shechianu, you're making the rest of the week for some reason that doesn't make any sense to us. And if you're only seeing it, what would you say every night? Shechianu.
You mean if they're saying cut out the miracles, wouldn't that also be saying not to say two brachos, but just say one?
No, they're saying which one, we see that one drops after the first day. So they're saying which drops. So they say drop Zman, drop Shechianu. So why drop Zman? Why not drop? How do you call it? Drop, how do you call it?
Nace.
Why do you say the miracle only happened on the first day?
Because what are we celebrating?
I'm saying if you talk about the miracle of the oil.
I'm not going to do that. What are we celebrating? What are we celebrating?
Military.
I'm not going to say it happened or didn't happen. There's no question that what we're celebrating is a military victory that allowed us both to reestablish sovereignty and to take possession and cleanse and reestablish the Beit HaMikdash. There's no question in the world.
The question about
the oil is, and I'll show you that it's tangential, because imagine the story for a second as follows. I'm going to give you the story. Let's say the Greeks are in control of Beit HaMikdash, and they've impurified everything and all that kind of stuff. And two guys, right, Pete and Jack, sneak into the Beit HaMikdash one night, and they say, you know, under the Greek's eyes, we're going to light the menorah. For, you know, we found some oil. Right, it'll light for 20 minutes. We're going to stay until it goes out. They light it, and it lasts for a week, and they're hanging out. They're starving. They don't know what to do. And finally it goes out. They come out, and they whisper, hey, guys, we lit the menorah, and it lasted a whole week. Is it going to be going to make a holiday? The Gemara is filled with stories like that happening. Hanan Mendoza's daughter lighting vinegar for Shabbos candle. We have lots of stories like that. On the other hand, flip it. Let's say that you have this victory by a ragtag bunch of guerrilla fighters against the mightiest army in the Middle East. They beat them. They reestablish sovereignty. They take the Beit HaMikdash. They reestablish sovereignty over the territory, and they cleanse the Beit HaMikdash. Are we going to have a holiday? Of course we'll have a holiday. So the oil story, I'm not concerned now the historicity of it. The oil story just isn't a central player in the story. That's what's been very misrepresented in the media. The oil story may be there in order to explain why it's 8 days. It may be there to explain why we use menorah. It may be there to explain particulars. That's the simplest reason is because it was patterned after Sukkot. We talked about that a few years ago, that Sukkot is an 8-day holiday, and the original name of the holiday was Sukkot of Kislev. I like Sukkot Sheni Kilo. But here, they're throwing out a possibility, which is extravagant, and we're never going to stick with it. There would be, you'd say Shachianu every day. That's weird. We don't do them with anything. Okay? So the answer they give is nes kol yome ite. The nes was every day. Now, there's two ways to read that. One way is to read that is to say that the fighting and the, you know, all of that stuff was just every day is a miracle. But that's a little difficult. Here, what they may be saying is, since we've allowed the story of the oil to become the guiding light, sorry for the pun, to help us kind of see the holiday, then you have to say that that miracle happened every day. That was a daily thing that there was enough oil. Okay.
That's why we do the Shachianu. That's the argument for Shachianu.
That's there for nace being every night. Because every night there's a nace, right?
No, the fighting didn't last 8 days.
The fighting lasted 30 years.
Yeah, but I mean the decisive battle.
The decisive battles. The battles for the Maccabean Wars went on for 30 years. The battle that we particularly had, the particular battle that we had that led to the liberation of Beit HaMikdash parenthetically, and something we talked about a few years ago, happened earlier than Kislev. Happened probably in the beginning of the fall. And they deliberately waited. They actually said in 2 Maccabees, why? They deliberately waited for several weeks to rebuild the Mizbeach and offer up Korbanot. They said why? Because they wanted to do it on the same exact day in the calendar that the Greeks had put their Avodah Zarah on, the 25th of the winter month, celebrating Saturnalia. Right? So it's like an in-your-face thing. Okay. So now, that all is a preface. Ben, you came at a perfect time because now we're going to kick into the real stuff.
I know, they 10 minutes, you think that I was some sort of criminal down there.
Oh, yeah. It's well, here you're a welcome person. Okay. Maimavarech. So the question is, what bracha do you make? Right? Meaning, By the way, what do you think about this? Again, you ask any second grader in the Hebrew school, everybody knows that. And here we're asking, what bracha do you make on lighting their Chanukah? Right? So now, why don't they ask about the other two? Because the other two are part of other systems. Shasa Nisim we know from Megillah, and Shachianu we know from all over the place. But this is a unique bracha, so they're going to focus on this. And this is where the problems really begin. I'm going to ask you this question. Why do I put a mezuzah on my door? There's one simple reason. God said so. I got to put a mezuzah on my door. Right? Why do I put tefillin on in the morning? God said so. Does it? Are there all sorts of other lessons and all sorts of other... Fine. But I do it because God said so. Right? And therefore, I say a bracha. God told me to put a mezuzah. I do it. A few months from now, we're going to sit at a table, lean to the left, and eat some crackers. And I'm going to say, "Shekhar Shalom Sabbat Sivan Al Chilat Matzah," because God said, "Ba'erov Tochlu Matzot." You got to eat matzah. Here's the problem. My Mevarech. Now,
you're
wording.
Out of peace when you say that.
What?
God said it, that the rabbis interpret how it's supposed to be fulfilled.
Yes, but right. But God said eat matzah. I'm doing what God said. I'm doing what God said based on the rabbi's guidance.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm doing what God said. Okay. Right. My Mevarech. So now, as you see, I put it underlined in bold so you can see the wording. Asher kidashanu v'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. Right? Is that, by the way, everybody's nosach around the table? Do you all say lahadlik ner shel Chanukah? Okay, yeah. Good. So I want to show you, I'm going to show you on this page.
Yeah, what's the alternative?
Good, I'm going to show you five alternatives on this page before we get up. Five different versions. But in the meantime, that's what we have. Okay. The problem that Gemara asks is, Heichan Sivanu. Where did God ever say light near Chanukah? God never said light near Chanukah. Chanukah happened after the age of prophecy. There's no prophet that said, God told me that you guys should light near Chanukah. As a matter of fact, we didn't even start lighting near Chanukah as a result of the war. It started maybe 200 years later. So where did God ever command us?
Command to be grateful to the appreciation.
But not this act. I'm going to say this act. I agree. God said, remember Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but God also said, eat matzah. Therefore, I say a bracha, al chila matzah. Why do I do this? Hechan sivanu. So, Rav Avya amar mi lo tasur. I used green in the Koran font for psukim. Lo tasur. What is lo tasur? So, in the Torah, and this is central to our entire lives that we're looking at. Our entire lives of Jews are informed by this. In the Torah, in Parshat Shoftim and Deuteronomy 17, it tells us the following. When you come to the land and there is something which is too difficult for you to adjudicate, you will go to the place where God chooses and you will ask the Kohanim, the Shoftim, who will be there in that day, what to do. And you will follow exactly what they tell you. Do not deviate to the right or to the left. Right? Rashi, famous Rashi, they're quoting the Sifri, says, why say to the right, to the left? Even if they tell you that what seems to be right is left, and what seems to be left is right, you still have to follow what they say. Herman Wouk once, Allah Shalom, gave a talk in YU and said that was the whole source of the Cain Mutiny, was that Rashi. right? Although he did a lot of extra work on it. But, so Rav Avya says, Lo Tasur. What's Lo Tasur mean? Since the Torah says you must follow what the central court says, and you may not deviate at all, therefore, when I light Ner Chanukah, I'm following what God said, a little indirectly. Basically, I'm saying, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Cholam Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvotav Tzivanu, I'm going to do this in English, to listen to the Beit Din who told me to light Ner Chanukah.
But how do you jump from, if you have a question about something you don't
Oh, because what else does it say? Vasita pia Torah asher yorulachan. You have to do by the instruction that they do, which means it can happen in one of two ways. One way can be to settle a difficulty you have on Torah law, or it could be that when they generate a law, that now becomes part of the corpus of halacha. Now, who's the they?
Logic?
Who's the they?
Well, that's the difference.
Right? So the they has to be the central Beit Din, meaning it has to be an authority recognized by Am Yisrael in general. There's always going to be outliers who recognize them as the halachic authority. And so when they issue a ruling, we're bound by Torah law to follow it. I understand what you're saying. The context of the mitzvah is a question that comes up. But the wording of the mitzvah makes it clear that we're bound to follow what they say, whether we generate it or they generate it. Either way. Oh, because, very good. So the Rambam in Hilchot Mamrim addresses this exact issue and says as follows. If the Beit Din were to turn around and say, and great example right in front of us because we have both chicken and meat. If the Beit Din were to turn around and say, yeah. What?
No,
of course not. That's why. But if the Beit Din were to turn around and say, the Torah prohibits meat and milk, and we're now adding chicken to that prohibition, that would be a violation of Baal Tosif. If on the other hand they say, we're going to say you may not eat chicken with cheese as a restriction to keep you from violating it, that's fine. And that's, the Rambam uses that example. Okay? But now back in here, Rav Nechemya Amari has a different pasuk. And maybe Rav Nechemya was sensitive to what Jason asked, which is, well, the first pasuk is really in the context of a court settling a problem. Here, at the beginning of Hazina, we're told, go ask your elders and they'll instruct you what to do, which means you have to follow what the elders say. Okay, two different sources. Meiti Rav Amram, watch this challenge from Rav Amram on the whole notion. Dmai. Now, just to bring us into the picture, when we live in Israel, we are obligated that when we have produce, like the lettuce and tomatoes are on the plate, we are not allowed to eat the produce until we separate taxes, right? Food taxes, trumot and masrot, kohen, etc. A problem arose towards the end of the Second Temple period that there were lots of people, farmers, who were presenting themselves as being loyal Jews who followed the law, who actually weren't being very careful about anything besides truma. Truma they did, the rest they didn't do. So they instituted a rule called demai. And the rule meant that whenever you bought from one of these guys, not somebody who had a tuda, but some one of these guys, you had to make separate your own masrot to make sure that it was kosher food, right? Whenever you separate masrot, you make a bracha. It's a bracha. Allah farshat trumot to masrot. Okay? Watch this. Hadmai, this is a Mishnah in Dmai, ma'arvin bo, you can use it for an Eruv, even though you can't eat it. You can use it to, as Eruv food. Mishtatfin bo, that's the Eruv in a Mavui. Marachin alav, if you ate Dmai, you make a, you bench. If you eat non-kosher food, you don't bench. But if you eat Dmai, you bench. Umazamnin alav, if somebody ate Dmai, you can make it part of your Zimun. Umafrishin oto, this is the kicker. Arum ubein ashmashot. You can separate Dmai when it's maybe Shabbat, even though you can't separate masrot then, right? Because Dmai, again, it's like not sure that you really need to divide it. And the main thing is arum. Arum means if you have no clothes on. You're sitting there and you have naked. Now, what's the problem here is when you separate trumot to masrot, what do you got to do? You got to say a bracha. You can't say bracha when you're naked. That's prohibited actually in the Torah, right here. You're telling me that every time, because this is the principle they're cutting to, every time you're doing something the rabbis command you, do you make a bracha? The rabbi said light near Hanukkah, so you make a bracha. The rabbi said separate dmai, you make a bracha? How can you make a bracha when you're naked? They quote the pasuk in Kitetzei, your camp must be holy when God's presence is there. You're not allowed to make a bracha when you don't have clothes on. So Abaye comes the following. I'm Abaye. Why are we separating Dmai? Because we don't know. We don't know if it's been separated. The rabbi said, to be sure, separated, because we don't know. So Abaye says, Vadai de divrayim bayi bracha. When do we have to make a bracha? When it's something that's rabbinic, but it's vadai, like Hanukkah. Hanukkah for sure happened. Safek de divrayim lo bayi bracha. But when the rabbis say, do something just to avoid doubt, then you don't make the bracha. That doesn't work very well. Because where are you going to be for Pesach?
New York.
New York, okay. And New York, how many Seder are you going to have? Two. And what are you going to do with the second Seder? You're going to make all those brachot. Guess what? We're keeping a second day of Yontif. Why? Because it's a fake, right? In Israel, we have one day. Why do we have 2 days in Arizona and in New York?
Committee.
What? So Yom Tov Sheni, the Safek to Divremu, by bracha. We make brachot on second day Yontif, and second day Yontif is safek. So your equation, your solution doesn't work. The answer is hatam ki echad lo zalzel lebe. This is a real good, big consideration. What would happen if we had second day Yontif and we told people, keep second day Yontif, but don't make any of the brachot for Yontif? What would they think about it? Sit down in the Seder, but do a half a Seder. How would they treat the Niyantif? They're treated like, and then it would be gone. So in other words, they had to institute full Yontif to make sure people didn't pull away to no Yontif. All right?
In Israel.
So when there is no Yontif. It's chol. But you can imagine people who, in the States, who say, first day Yontif, yeah, second and then the next generation would be, wouldn't exist. Rava, Amar Rava has a different take, which is, Rova me'aretz ma'asrinei. And he says a different story. The reality is most people separated ma'asrot. Demai was a safek katan, meaning a small doubt. So they don't make a bracha. Okay, but notice what they're dealing with. I wanted to introduce you a little bit to Talmudic reasoning here and the methodology. And again, it's a plug for Daf Yomi, which is restarting the cycle in a couple weeks. Is because what's happening here is they're making a statement that you're making a bracha on Ner Chanukah. And how in the world can you make a bracha and say, thank you, God, for making us holy and commanding us to light Ner Chanukah? God never said light Ner Chanukah. The answer is, yeah, God said, listen to the Beit Din. So I'll show you something else to get. We have to listen to the Beit Din. We don't make a bracha. So we come up with the different answers. Get ready for this. I asked you, you all said, Ladin Ner Shel Chanukah, you know, one version of the bracha. I told you I'd show you five more. Okay? So let's start with this.
Light on the subject.
Oh, good. There you go. Okay. One little preface here, one little note here, and then the rest are going to go very quickly. One little note here, which is, when does the mitzvah of lulav apply? So the mitzvah of lulav applies on the first day of Sukkot only, except in the Beit HaMikdash. What did Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai establish, ordain, after the Mikdash was destroyed? That we take it all 7 days to remember the Beit HaMikdash, and we do. So why am I shaking lulav on the fourth day of Sukkot?
It's
the Rabbanan, right? It's rabbinic. And what am I doing? I'm making a bracha, aren't I? Watch this. Ketzem rachim on Ner Chanukah. So I have a question. What bracha do you make on Ner Chanukah? Rav Amar, and I'm quoting Rav, this is the Talmud Yerushalmi, Baruch Hashem Kedishon Mitzvah Tzivanu Al Mitzvah Tadlakat Ner Chanukah. Like that one? Look at that bracha. Not Ladlik Ner Shel Chanukah. Al mitzvah tadlakat ner Chanukah. In the manuscript of the Yerushalmi, it reads Al mitzvah ner Chanukah. And in one of the Rashi versions, the school of Rashi version, it's al hadlakat ner Chanukah. So you got three more versions of the bracha right there in one shot. Now, watch this. Hakol modim biyom tov rishon shomer al tilat lulav. What do you say on lulav? First day you say what? Al tilat lulav. Ma pligina b'shar kol yamim. What do we say on the other days? By the way, what do we say on the other days? I'll tell lulav. Rabbi Yochanan Amar al netilat lulav. Rabbi Shimon Levi Amar. I can't even say it. It's so wild. What does he say? Al mitzvat zekinim. Meaning? Hashem commanded us to do what the rabbi said. And that's the bracha you make when you pick up lulav after the first day.
You must feel like he's being sarcastic.
Except that he's not. Mama Rav Belulav, what did Rav say about Lulav? What would Rav say about Lulav? And that's easy. Rav said, Asher Kidshon Zivanu Al Havakat Ner Chanukah. Maim Chanukah Shimi Divrein Hu Omer Om Tzvat Ner Chanukah. Right? Notice, even in the Yerushalmi, you have two versions. Lulav Shu Dvar Torah Lo Kol Shekein. Chanukah is totally Durabonin. And Rav says, make the bracha al Chanukah. What would Rabbi Shimon Levi, who said on Lulav, you say, Al mitzvah zekenim, what would he say about Chanukah? Maim lulav shudvar tomar, Al mitzvah zekenim, Chanukah shudvar tomar, Al kol shekein. Rabbi Shimon Levi would say, what bracha do you make on Chanukah? Al mitzvah zekenim. Which, if you think about it, fits the Gemara much better. Because what am I saying? Thank you, God, for commanding me to do what the rabbi said. In this case, includes lighting Chanukah candles. Which, by the way, means you would say that when you wash your hands.
A lot of things.
You would say that, which other things? You would say that before saying hello. You would say that before eating more, maybe, right?
As long as that. This was a big fight back then about what to do.
So evidently, we don't hear about a brouhaha, but this is what's going on. The Rambam, by the way, addresses this issue and says, Kol hanotel tell you adav, when you wash your hands, bein l'achila, bein l'kriya, shvam in the tefillah, and the Rambam is bothered by the same thing. God never told us to wash our hands. It's a mitzvah of the Chachamim, and we're commanded to listen to them. He quotes a Pasuk near Rav Avya's, al piya Torah shari rucha. You have to follow the Torah they teach you. By the way, the Rambam's version of the bracha, you can see it in source 4. Asher kisham tzav tzivanu l'hadlik ner shella chanukah. Shella chanukah, one word. Right? And by the way, many Rishonim have the version, l'hadlik ner chanukah. If anybody have Chabad friends, they would say l'hadlik ner chanukah. The Sadi Gaon had that version. Many Rishonim have that. That, by the way, that's the version that shows up in Shulchan Aruch, l'hadlik ner chanukah. A lot of different versions of the bracha, but the one that's most intriguing is the al mitzvah zakenim. That you're essentially making the bracha, you're thanking God for making us holy and giving and commanding us to follow what the rabbi said. So what we've done over the course of the past 35 minutes, we took a look at a sugya on Masechet Shabbat. Past years we've talked about why Chanukah is in Shabbat, why there's no Chanukah, Masechet. We looked at a sugya on Masechet Shabbat. We discussed the issue of the bracha. We talked a little methodology of how the Gemara works. We talked the issue of the bracha and how it is that we can make a bracha and thank God for commanding us to do something that God never told us to do. This, by the way, has huge impact on other areas of halacha, such as making a bracha on something that you're not obligated to do. And case in point is the famous Rambam who says, if a woman wants to do any mitzvah that she's exempt from, she may do it without a bracha. That's the Rambam's approach. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, she can make a bracha. And that becomes a very practical thing every year on Rosh Hashanah. When typically there's a few women who are at home because they just gave birth, they're on pregnancy watch, they have to go home, and somebody comes to the house to blow for them, and the first question they ask is, are you a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi? If you're an Ashkenazi, make the bracha, because you're following Rabbeinu Tam. If you're a Sephardi, you don't make the bracha, you're following the Rambam, right? It actually worked this year. I went to somebody's house and blew shofar for her on the first day. I said the second day, should I come back and blow? I said, no, she already went to the hospital. It worked. And Baruch Hashem, the nice baby boy was born, and the bris is on Yom Kippur. But in any case, so that's what we looked at over the course of this this year, and we saw various versions of the bracha, which tells you, by the way, something, that the wording of the bracha was not something hard and fixed, because you find all of these different versions, of which they're really kind of two groups. There's l'hadlik, and it's l'hadlik ner Chanukah, l'hadlik ner shel Chanukah, l'hadlik ner shel Chanukah, those three. Then there's al. Al mitzvah ner Chanukah, al hadlakat ner Chanukah, al mitzvah hadlakat ner Chanukah, which is a different thing. And that comes down to the whole issue of le and al and brachot, which have different orientations. And then, of course, there's what the Yerushalmi suggest, which is al mitzvah zakenim, which is a whole different story.